Welcome to the podcast. I am photographer Sid Caesar.
This is designer Dave Say.
And what's going on? Well, this is our 21st podcast on a lovely, warm, sunny April 14th.
Yeah, finally. Almost nice and warm.
We're almost through the middle of April already.
Yep. Tax season.
That's crazy.
Coming upon us.
That's right. Taxes are tomorrow. Well, not tomorrow.
Nope, they're due the 18th.
They're due the 18th, but yep.
We get an extra
in tradition,
weekend.
They're the 15th.
Yep, I think if there's an extra day or something like that... That interrupts the normal business number of days. They push it out a day.
Yeah.
But usually it's the 15th.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And it's also Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1 on DVD tomorrow.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
On the 15th, which is kind of weird because most movies usually come out on Tuesdays.
Oh, yeah.
That's movie release day, music and movie release day. But for some reason, they feel that Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1 is so important
special.
That it deserves its own Friday release.
Yeah, well.
I guess. Kind of strange.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the second part.
Yes.
That's coming out in July?
Is it July or something like that? Yeah, so I have to go down and get it when it comes out tomorrow because Sarah is just in Harry Potter craze yeah. right now with the last movie coming out, and you know she's like, well, now that the movies are done, now I can finally get the books and read them.
Finally read the books, and you get to read them all in a row.
And
you're not
going
to see
all...
her for like a month.
Probably not. I mean, she burns through books really fast.
Oh yeah,
yeah, she's a really fast reader.
Okay. Well, I guess you're right.
Yeah. So Harry Potter. Yay, Harry Potter.
Yep. Paul so there's more Halo time for you, I guess.
While she's reading. Exactly. I've been doing a... I set up a Wednesday night Halo thing.
Oh, with Kenta Koga.
With Kenta Koga. Kenta Koga has not been part of it yet.
I
think he's
been
busy.
I would assume that Kenta would be part of it.
It seems like he's more of a Gears of War kind of guy.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know if he's given us the poo-poo because he's more of a Gears person than a Halo person.
Huh.
But he is included in every time we post a little thing. I set up a little Facebook group and... we've been playing on Wednesday nights, like after dinner, we just jump on and the cool thing is that we're all the people that have been playing so far, like we all equally suck as bad as everybody else in our group.
Well, so I should join.
You should. We are literally like the Bad News Bears. Like we are so bad.
You know, I know the reference, but I've never seen the movie.
You never seen the movie?
No.
It was just like this horrible, horrible, horrible young teenage baseball team. And they could never win until Walter Matthau showed up and learned to teach them properly or something like that. I don't know. It's been a long
Walter
time.
Walter Matthau taught them how to win?
I think so. Or maybe he was the lazy coach and somebody else came in. But the important thing is that we all equally suck.
Do you have a clan name?
Not yet, but it'll probably be like the We Suck clan.
Oh, yeah.
And like we played last night, we just got completely destroyed. I mean, at some points, we had a score of like 3-35. And we're usually, I thought I was better than that, but sometimes you just get, it matches you up with just the wrong kinds of people that are just very well.
You could just be out of practice.
I could be out of practice, but it's fun because, you know, you're just having fun. So we do like all kinds of different gameplay types, and we do some firefight, and we do some matchmaking, and do some team stuff, and so it's good. So we've been doing that the last couple of, almost a month now, we've been doing it on Wednesday nights. And it's good. It's good to sit down and just kind of have fun and laugh with all your buddies.
Excellent.
And shoot things.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So we have to catch up on this Sucker Punch thing because we saw it.
We were
last
talking
time,
about it. Yeah.
But we.
Well, we were talking about it the last time. We hadn't.
We hadn't
seen it
yet,
and we were trying to figure out why we haven't seen it. So shortly after the last podcast, we actually went and we saw it.
We saw it
on a matinee, and I don't know. Should you want to go first, or should I?
Let's see. Let me try to go first.
Okay.
I'm sure you'll come in to say to say everything that I'm missing.
Okay.
See where my notes has on this. Can't do this. See this pop filter, though.
You got your face buried in it.
Yeah.
It's not a mask.
It's not a mask.
It's like
you
a hockey
reposition
mask.
This thing. And
it's
I have
like
a lamp
mask.
Here now so I can actually read. So let's see. My thoughts on Sucker Punch. And there may be spoilers in this, so you may be forewarned. Although Sucker Punch is such old news now.
I don't know.
But anyway, I thought it was visually very interesting. Set design, there are not lots of lovely details on the props and things. For example, I remember this one scene in the very first battle in which Baby Doll's fighting like those giant Shogun warrior things. She's walking away from him, from them having vanquished them, and I noticed she had one of those cell phone, those Japanese cell phone dangly light up things
yeah.
on the lanyard hook of her model 1911 pistol, which was just adorable. And I just thought that was cool. And the set design was pretty awesome. And also, I was very impressed by the training they must have gone through to get the movements right. Like in yeah. that second battle, when she had all the girls going through. These trenches of World War One, fighting steam-powered Nazi zombies. they looked like they had practiced that. You know, usually when you see like a scene like this, you know, there's like lots of bad movement.
Yeah.
You know, the guns are pointing every which way, you know, sweeping each other. They might actually blow each other's knees off, things like this. Fingers in bad positions, like over the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
No, but they were practiced. They moved like with speed and with accuracy. It was hot. and it didn't make me go, "Gah, these people are like..." Yeah, so that was good.
Yeah.
I didn't so much like the later battle scenes, which became more and more computer generated.
Yeah, as time
went on.
The
first one was the most physical
yeah.
looking one.
Yeah.
And, you know, so story wise, though, it's that story and the story and the story thing, which I got. And at the end of it, I thought that we kind of got ripped off and we didn't get to see the real story.
Huh.
Because, like, ostensibly the story is about how this girl saves all these other girls, or tries to save these other girls in this insane asylum.
Mm-hmm.
But it's told through a fantasy story told inside of another fantasy story. And at the end of it, at the end of the movie, you figure, like, oh, it's, this stuff might have really happened. But you actually didn't get to see that part.
Right.
That was the part that, like, in my mind...
That you wanted to see.
I mean, instead of seeing all these, like, fancy video game sequences, you know, they were fun to watch and they're pretty to look at, but I was left wondering, well, if this is supposed to be a story about being an uplifting story about empowerment and all that sort of stuff that Zack Snyder said it was about, why are you going to show us the fantasy, like, your video game sequence version of that where, right. you know, all the stuff that might have been really hard was covered up with all this candy? So that was my thought of it. But... Yeah, I'm curious to see what the director's cut is going to be like.
Yeah, he's already gone on record as saying that the movie went through 7 edits to get the rating that it got, and he gave he wanted a PG-13 rating. And then there was a lot of things that were filmed, like he filmed musical numbers for each transition sequence
yeah.
when it goes into sort of like dream aspect one into this action scene.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So okay. he cut all those out. So this is sort of the perfect example of I'm curious. I'm going to go and buy the DVD or the Blu-ray
yeah.
upon release because I want to see everything that was cut out.
Yep.
Because of time or rating or whatever. And I'm curious to see if there's something that's more to it than what we got to see on the screen.
Yeah.
And I definitely want to hear. I want an audio commentary because I'm really curious to see what he wanted to set out to do, and as opposed to what eventually ended up being shown.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of it might have made more sense to me if there had just been, like, you know, a couple of minutes of framing before these sequences.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is happening for this reason, or this means that. Right? I think one drawback is we never really get to know any of the characters.
No.
You know, in this thing. And yeah, maybe it's not that kind of movie. Or at least it's not built that kind of movie. So it's a movie where you get to look at a lot of, like, girls in miniskirts.
It's eye candy.
And stuff
it's
like
it's
that.
An eye candy movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a video game.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
But there's a lot of subtlety in the set design that I would love to, like, look at in a Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone was pointing out somewhere online how the style of the clothing changes. I mean, there's that bordello scene, and then there's, like, the fantasy scenes. And to the crude male eye, all we're just seeing is, like, there's flash everywhere, right? But apparently there's a subtle distinction between the way that they dress in the bordello world being more like, you know, male pleasing, but then in the fantasy sequences, these are how the girls would normally want to dress themselves up to be powerful. And so, like, I hadn't noticed this in the first time around, so I'm kind of curious to see. You know, like, you know, so if a bunch of, like, girls
little
want to
outfit accents and stuff. You
yeah,
know,
like, I mean, just... like, there's like Hello Kitty accent on like on one of those jump jet type robots.
Oh yeah, the rabbit.
I don't know. I didn't look, you know, that closely.
Yeah.
So. I'm curious to see if that's really true or not.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, how did you think of it?
I think I summed it up as the movie is a beautiful, fantastic mess.
Yep. Yep.
I think whoever cut the trailer for the movie deserves an Oscar for like what you think you're going to get and then what you actually get.
Truthfully, you do get everything that you see in the trailer.
You do. It's not going to be an Oscar nominated movie for story and stuff like that. And you have to forget about it. Not every movie is going to be, you know, amazingly well written. And I think I got my money's worth out of it. I think there was enough in it that justified. I mean, it was like what we were talking about when the trailer came out. It is a movie that is catering to nerds. Like it's got giant samurai and it's got Gatling guns and it's got mech robots and it's got dragons and it's got World War II and it's got steampunk and it's got, you know, half naked young ladies running around, you know, tantalizing the eyes. I think it's everything that it's like somebody took, you know, a comic store and a sci-fi store and like everything and threw it at the wall and just about everything stuck.
Yep.
And he was like, I'm going to make a movie out of this. So from the nerd / comic / sci-fi geek in me, I thought it was fantastic.
Yep.
Even the parts where, you know, there wasn't much story in the downtime, every time I got into one of those action scenes, I thought it was great, especially like the first couple, like the steampunk Nazi thing where they're in World War II and, especially the first one where she's fighting those big giant, whatever the hell they were, those Bushido warriors and stuff that were like five times the size of her.
Yep. Yep.
I thought it was good. And it's after me saying, okay, well, you know, he's done 300 and he did The Watchmen. The next thing he has to do has to be original. I think he tried to do something original. And I think that's why the story was lacking. Cause I think he's a visual guy. I don't think he's like Michael Bay, level of fantastic visual director, but I think he's got a lot of cool pop culture sort of things going around in his head.
Yeah.
And I think that's what he knows how to do. I think if somebody else gave him a script, I think he'd be better. He's better as a, like just a, take a script and direct it rather than let's sit down and try to write something. Which I never thought I want to say about him because it was like, you know, up until this, it was like, oh, dude, really? Another comic book adaption? Like, you know, like he can go down to the comic store, pick any graphic novel he wants. He's like, I'm going to turn this into a movie. I can do that. And
what were the two comic book adaptions he did?
He did 300.
Oh, that was a comic book?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was a Frank Miller comic. And then he did The Watchmen. Hmm. And, you know, and both of those were just about, I mean, you open the graphic novel and there's your storyboard.
Yeah.
And so that was why when you know, it was like he was rumored to be doing another movie. It's like, it's got to be something original. He's got to do something original because if he does another comic adaption, it's like, oh, all this guy can do.
Yeah.
So I liked it. I'm not a big fan of him in general. I like his, it's weird because I like his movies, but I'm just not a big fan of him. And I kind of feel bad for him now because since the movie reviews have been coming out, you know, now like they're attacking him because of this movie and they're like, you know, all he can direct is crap and he can't write a story. And the biggest thing that bothers me is now they're like, oh, okay, well, obviously this guy's like a repressed pedophile and, you know, like this is his like way of trying to let everybody know that he's just a big pervert. And it's like, you know, really? Like, I can see certain types of ladies maybe watching the movie and being like, this is just catered towards nothing but like tongue hanging out men, you know, but just, you know, like if the movie's crap, let them, you know, rate the movie based on what the movie is. But a lot of these reviews have been like, they're just, you know, they're calling him names and they're trying to attack his personal lifestyle or whatever. And it's like, leave the guy alone. You know, for me, it's, if anything, at least the guy has the balls to make something like that. He's like, you know what I really like? I like chicks in schoolgirl outfits with thigh highs, and I like them to have big giant swords, and I like them to have guns, and I like them to think about them fighting giant Bushido, you know, ninja warriors with Gatling guns, and then I want them to drive biplanes and mech suits and fight Nazis that are, you know, made out of like, it's like, dude, all right. He's like, and he was like, you know what? I have the kind of clout where I can make a movie like that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are other people out there that like that kind of thing.
Hmm.
And luckily we're in the time now where pop culture and nerds and geeks are practically celebrated. So, you know, the audience is there and they're going to come and see it. I went and saw it just because I saw the trailer and I was like, holy crap, I have to see this.
Yeah.
Like, this is everything that's like, I collect, comics and toys and it's like, it's like that. Mm-hmm. So I think he partially succeeded in what he was trying to do. The action scenes I thought were pretty well done. I'm not a big fan of all complete CG green screen type stuff, which is what this was. It was just a bunch of actors acting in a green room.
Yeah.
And then everything else was sort of placed in there digitally. Mm. That seems to be the only thing that he can do, I guess. I mean, he did that with 300 and he did it with Watchmen, and he seems to be sticking with that tradition.
It would be prohibitively expensive to do it another way.
It could, yeah. I mean,
you're fighting 3D glass robots.
Well, some of it you have to, you know, but I mean, just on a whole, practically the entire movie was done, it seemed like, in green screen.
Well, the fantasy parts, the parts that you're remembering anyway.
Yeah.
Well, like the asylum scene was.
Was that
like
all? I guess that was all real. All right.
Then the bordello stuff and the thing. Like just people, just the regular interaction type stuff. You know, that was, you know, real stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but then it was anytime you went into one of those fantasy sequences, those were the set pieces.
Right. Really.
Those
right.
are where like he and his 3D creative or his creative team was,
yeah.
like would visualize all this stuff, and you're going to need a lot of green screen stuff.
Yes.
I would imagine that that scene in the. Trenches, the World War I-ish sequence,
yep.
or World War II-ish sequence in the beginning.
That's true. I think they were in...
That, they must have had built something for that to interact yep. with.
That's true.
But that the train, the last train thing, that was like that seemed like it was almost completely CG.
Yep.
And that was the one that felt the most disconnected.
That was the weakest of them all. You could, yeah. I think by the time you got to that, you were just kind of burnt out on like, what else can they do, you know, besides flip and slice and shoot? And
yeah, it wasn't that interesting a scene or even a setup either.
And it was fast. That last one was really quick. It seemed like it was lots a very of inner short cuts, scene.
Very
yeah.
short. Like the kind of action editing I really hate.
Yeah.
I like to see a complete move from the beginning to end and see something happen. Rather than like chop, 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 yeah. chop, 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 chop. Yeah. Oh, boom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a, I think somebody had linked it was like one of those like Funny or Die websites and stuff. And they took movie posters, and it was like if you turned like the text on the movie poster to actually say what the movie was about.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And they had one, and the very last one was awesome. It was almost done in Flash or something like that, but it was a picture of one of the Bourne Identity movies. It was one of the last two movies.
Yeah,
because there was a different director on the last two. And if you've seen these two Bourne movies with Matt Damon, the first one was really well done, and then the second one and the third one were by the same director who had a different approach with the camera. And all of the fight scenes that he would do, he filmed them like with a handheld camera, so everything was wicked shaky, and you really couldn't see what was going on. So the movie poster itself, like it shows you the movie poster, and also the movie poster, it's just shaking, and you can't read anything that's on it. And I thought that was really funny.
Nice.
But I thought it was, yeah, so I thought it was good. I'm definitely going to pick it up because I'm curious to see what, you know, what behind-the-scenes stuff is going on in there.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah.
I would give it maybe, on a score from 1 to 10, I'd probably give it like a 7.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I think for probably the first three action sequences, like the you know, like the meat and potatoes, the fantasy sequences, I think I would give that maybe an 8.
Yeah.
8.5, because I enjoyed those.
Yeah.
I think the rest of the story, I'd probably give it like a 4.
Yeah.
If we were just going strictly by story.
Yeah.
So I would just combine it and say...
How many months would you have to wait until you watched it again? The one as is in the theater.
This is a perfect movie where it's a cue up the specific scenes movie.
You really?
You know, I'll watch it again when it comes out on DVD, and then when I want to go back and watch her kick giant samurai butt, I'll put that on.
Yeah, there's nothing really in the rest of the film that's...
No, unless the director's cut has changed so much that it was like, wow, I can't believe they cut this much out.
That's what I'm thinking. If you're comparing like the best action scene in Sucker Punch with like Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
You can't compare those.
It's like different. In terms of, you gave it an 8 for the action sequences.
Yeah.
So like if you rank it up against other action sequences, you say you can't do that.
I don't know.
Just in terms
it's like a different genre of thing.
Well, I guess I would evaluate how much I'm engaged by the action.
Yeah.
You know, so like. I would say, like, there's that bar fight in Raiders.
Yeah.
That's like a 9+.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Because
even though it's, like, stuff you've seen before, I mean, there's things that are happening. There's some good action sequences in Die Hard, too,
mm-hmm.
which you can see that stuff is building up, and then there's this tension, and release, tension, release.
Yeah.
And then things change suddenly. Yep. None of that in any of these action sequences
No.
This.
But this is more of, like, a comic/Star Wars kind of action scene.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And I think I just can't compare them because it's like, you know, with something like Raiders, I mean, that was all done real. It was all real stunts and real stuntmen. And, you know, it was like, so when you watch it, it's like, wow, like not only are you amazed by the fact that they're doing it, but the fact that they're actually doing it.
Yeah. So maybe it's a matter of the editing of those scenes.
Could be. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway. Comparing Sucker Punch to Raiders of the Lost Ark is like, oh my God.
Yeah. Well, it's like, so I would give the movie overall a 7 just in terms of interest.
Yeah.
As a movie itself to recommend, I would never recommend it to anyone other than someone who's interested in visual effects.
Right. Yeah. I think it was an interesting experiment that he was trying to do.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just, you know, there's not, it's kind of, it reminds me of when Snakes on a Plane was getting ready to come out.
Yeah, yeah.
And how huge it was in hype on the internet. Because it had found its specific audience on the internet. Like, everybody knew about it that was interested in it. And then when it came out, it basically tanked because yeah. The rest of the world is not the internet and the rest of the world really doesn't care about this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I wonder how many internet people actually went to see it. Because It's just fun to say, Snakes on a Plane.
Snakes on a Plane, yeah. I mean,
self-gratifying right there.
So I think it's one of those situations where, you know, you're making a movie where you're going to have an established, you've already got the established fan base that's there.
Yeah.
And so it's more I'm making this for those people who are going to get it rather than the mass public who are going to watch it and be like, Where's the story? I don't, you know. And that's okay. I mean, that's you know, it's a niche film. That's how fan, you know, that's how, like, what do they call them? Like Rocky Horror or like
cult
stuff. Film. Yeah. You know, like, I don't know. You know, I think at first I had said, you know, I could maybe see this turning into a cult film.
Did it?
I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. Who knows? You know what I think? Somebody had the right point when they said the reason why Zack Snyder made this movie is so he can go to comic conventions and he can now see girls dressed up like his characters for cosplay. And I'm like, whoa, there we go, right? So he was like,
That's pretty...
And I came back and I went on Flickr and I looked up Baby Doll Sucker Punch cosplay. Yeah. Boom, whole bunch of stuff already up there.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. Be interesting to see what their perspective is on Sucker Punch.
He's very cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah. All right. That was way too much time on
that. Was a lot of time. We might have an extended extended podcast.
What else has been going on? So,
let's see.
I turned another year older since the last podcast. Oh,
congratulations.
Thank you.
How old are you now?
I am a giant 36.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
You've slid over that big hump in the middle. Now you're just kind of like, you know.
I'm almost 40.
Yep.
It's all downhill.
Tumbling inexorably toward 40.
It's always been downhill, but now when I hit 40, it's really downhill. You know
what? 40 is awesome.
Oh, that's right. You're awesome. Like 52 or something like
that. Yeah, yeah. I'm 43. Just missed it by 9 years. I just look 52. But yeah, but you know, I think the reason why I thought 40 was cool was because I was playing World of Warcraft at the time.
Uh-huh.
And in World of Warcraft, when you hit level 40, that's like the big level. So level 10, level 20. Level 20 was the big one because that's when you could get your horse. And then was that level 40? I forget. So level 40 felt like, yeah, I finally have everything I need to take on the entire world. I can go anywhere. Except for this level 50 zone where I'll get my ass handed to me.
Exactly.
But it was a good level. So, and then when I turned 40, I felt like I'd figured out a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And things were starting to come together. Of course, now 3 years later, they still feel like they're coming together. So now I'm getting impatient.
Wow.
But yeah, it's the age of wisdom that comes upon you. Or is that 80? I forget. There's some Chinese thing. It was like when you turn 40. No, wait. I think when you turn 40, that's a very bad year for something in Chinese culture.
Huh.
I can't remember what.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
So I turned another year older.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And
so did you make a wish?
No, we didn't really do a whole. I don't even remember what we did.
You should have made a wish.
We didn't do a whole thing. We were going to go out to New York this upcoming weekend, and that kind of fell apart. It was just a financial thing.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. I think tomorrow. I think we're going to go down to the MFA, and there's a Chihuly exhibit down there we want to see. And
Patchouli?
Chihuly, Dale Chihuly. He's a guy that does glass work. Oh, okay. You should look him up. Find a link for him and. But he does really beautiful blown glass stuff. And usually he does these things based on flowers.
Oh.
and the pieces, I mean, the sculptures are just like, imagine taking all these crazy looking glass flowers that are all beautiful colors and then covering an entire ceiling with them all hanging down. And this is really nice work. So I guess the MFA's got a show there. So I think we're going to go over there tomorrow and just hang around Boston.
That sounds lovely and cultured.
Yes, it did.
I'm taking you to the shooting range. We're going to the
shooting range. I want somebody to take me to the woods. We can kill an animal.
We're
going to
go to the shooting range. We're going to shoot goods.
And, yeah, so there's that, and let me go through my little list here just to see what else is going on. Flea market season has started.
Oh, Hooray! Great. There's something I wanted you to look for me. What was it?
I don't remember. Was it a movie?
It might have been. I'm still looking for The Sixth Sense and
Gross Point Blank. Oh, I saw that. I saw it yesterday.
What?
Ugh. I saw it on Sunday. You'll have to come with us on Sunday.
All right.
I saw it for like $2.
$2?
I completely forgot you were looking for it.
Yeah.
It was like the deluxe edition, too. I've been, for the last 2 weeks since the season has started, I've been taking pictures with my cell phone. Like at the end of every Sunday, I just lay everything down. I take a picture of it, and I'm like, this is our acquisitions. And most of it's all been movies, which is cool. And it's like DVDs now are like $1 and $2 for used stuff. So it's like all kinds of – we came home with like 5 movies the other night.
Nice.
Which is really cool. And what else? So we've got also there – I'm going to a – I signed up for the New Hampshire Creative Club, which I'm not a member of, which I probably should be a member of. They are having on the 19th, April 19th, from 6 to 9 p.m., they're having a portfolio review networking and art event at the Manchester Community College in Manchester. It's a free event. You just sign up through Eventbrite or whatever they have set up. And I want to go because it'll be a chance to mingle with other people that are a member of the creative club. Yeah. And it's going to be like a portfolio review, like bring your portfolio in and hopefully you can meet some people and they can look through it.
Nice.
What they're trying to do is they're trying to send it out. They're trying to market it to a bunch of different people. They want to try to get like HR professionals. They want to try to get art directors to go. They want to try to get graphic designers to go, illustrators, students, photographers, just like get a bunch of people. Like ideally, I want to go because I'm hoping art directors and people from design companies will be there, and then I can show them my photography and say, this is who I am, and I'm a freelance photographer, and I'm in town, and here's some cards, and here's my, you know, I'll bring my iPad, and I'll try to spruce up my portfolio a little bit and be like, flip through here and let me know what you think. And then maybe I can also get constructive criticism about the portfolio, and they can say whether or not they think the images are strong or, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So it's free, and it's on the 19th, so I figured I'll go up and network a little bit. And there seems to be quite a few people that have already sort of logged in and committed to registered to go.
That's good. Cool.
So for more information about that, I guess you would just Google New Hampshire Creative Club and there should be something that comes up.
Yeah, we'll put a link in the...
Oh, yeah, that's right. So that should be kind of cool. So I'll try to spruce up my iPad portfolio and go on up there and see who I can network with.
Yeah, that's cool.
And
is that the first time you'll use your iPad portfolio, or have you been using it already?
It's set up, and I think a couple of people have seen it. Mm-hmm. But it's the first time that I'll be amid, hopefully, you know, like designers and media reps, so that I can say, here's who you know, here I am, and here's what I do, and take a look.
Nice.
And
I'm torn about going or not. Just to see. Because I've kind of fallen out of that world.
Yeah. They're trying to open it up for everybody. Like it says, you know, students come, general public come and mingle with creative professionals.
Oh, really? General public?
It says general public. It says general public.
Really?
And it's people that you know are going to be going. So
yeah, that's true.
Mike Weinstein looks like he's going to go.
Ah, Weinstein.
Amanda Narcissi. Okay. Is that how you say her name?
I have no idea. I've always said Narcissi.
Narcissi. N-A-R-C-I-S-I.
But I don't know the official
Narcissi.
Webster dictionary pronunciation. I don't know.
You'll have to tell us, Amanda.
Yeah.
And So that's the set. So that's the 19th. Yeah. I thought that would be kind of cool.
Cool.
So I'll go up and see what's going on.
You've also had some studio visits recently, haven't you?
I did. I had two classes from the New Hampshire Institute of Art.
Really?
Well, they weren't classes for me, but they were lighting classes at the Institute. And the instructor, Andy Lucas, who I've known for a very long time. Mm. So he brought him in for like a little studio visit. And there was about 12 to 14 students per visit. We had one in the morning at 9, and then we had another one at 5 o'clock. So I dragged out some old frame toy prints, and you know, I just kind of wanted to field questions from them and sort of get an idea of what, you know, if they had any questions. Most of them are juniors and seniors, so they're getting ready to graduate. Just to see if they had any questions about lighting or where they were in their lighting, and so it was good.
Were there any questions?
There was. A lot of it was sort of business-related type stuff.
Yes.
Just, you know, they're like, well, we're getting ready. You know, what was the first thing that you did when you graduated? And how did you get a studio? And like, you know, how do you do it once you get out of there?
Yeah.
So we talked a little bit about fine artwork, and I talked about, like, galleries and how to deal with galleries and, you know, mailing out portfolios and getting rejection letters. And then sort of that inevitable moment where you're like, oh my God, I don't have any galley reps and I need to pay the rent. And all of a sudden it's like, let's consider commercial stuff and see what that does.
Yeah.
So it was good. And I think the first visit, they were right around 2 to 2.5 hours. I think the first one was an hour and a half. And I think the second one at 5 p.m. went a little bit longer than that.
So you were like peppered with questions?
I kind of caught him up what I was doing. I sort of explained mistakes I've made along the way, you know, like little things that I've learned along the way. We tried to sort of rein it in constantly on lighting and just the different ways that you can learn how to light. And, you know, you don't always have to have 3 lights and you don't always have to have 2 lights. And, you know, just like everybody photographs differently, the way you light should also be differently, you know, to set you apart from everybody else and sort of your style. And how do you find your style and all that kind of stuff. So I thought it was pretty good. And I'm hoping everybody left. You know, I hope they weren't bored out of their minds, but I don't think they were. I think they were excited just to walk in and see, like, okay, this is a dude that went to the same school I went to. And, you know, he's got a whole furnished studio and he's got a bunch of work with, client work on the walls and he does fine artwork. And so I think hopefully they left a little inspired and encouraged, and, you know, you can do it, but it's, you know, you gotta work your butt off to do it. So it went good. And then I leave it open. Anytime I get like a studio visit like that, I always leave it open if any kids have any questions or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the help of the instructor, we sort of shilled my workshop a little bit.
Nice.
And so maybe I'll get a couple of kids from there to take that. There was a couple that seemed interested. So I think I like doing the studio visits anyways. I like getting kids in here and just answering questions that they might have. And
that's cool.
Just trying to sort of set them on the right path. Like, you know, these are some things that you could look into when you graduate and when you're ready to find a studio, if you're ready to find a studio and blah, 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 blah. So I thought it was pretty good. I was happy with it.
Nice. And the workshops are coming up on the end of this month, right? The first one?
The first one is April 30th, and I think it's almost filled. There's a couple of spots left, so if anybody wants to take it in April, there's a couple of spots left. I have 6 dates this year, and they're all on the website, portableportrait.com. So it should be kind of cool. I got somebody's taking it from New York. Somebody's coming all the way from New York. New York City, nice. To take it. So she's, like, doing travel and lodging, and, you know, so for her, it's like... Just stacking all kinds of, you know, so it's like, it's good. So I'm kind of glad that people are willing to make a little bit of a travel. And I still think the workshop is priced so that it's, you know, if you're doing this, you're trying to do this as a profession, you can write it off.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
I think it's the best value for the price. You know, you get a full day of shooting. And even if you're just trying to catch up, if you want to refresh, I had somebody who took the workshop 2 years ago and they sent an email saying, I'm pretty sure I'm going to sign up for the May one just because I haven't shot in a while and I really want to refresh her.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's pretty good.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about it. I've still got a couple little things I need to do to make sure everything's all set, line up my model for April and all that. But it's just about ready to go. And then what else do I have going on? I think the only other thing I have going on is... I think I can officially confirm now that I have a gallery show in February. I can't say that. February of 2012.
Yeah.
It's going to be a one man show, which is moi, at the NK Gallery in the SOA Arts District down in Boston.
Cool.
So I'm actually having, and it's going to be all my recent black and white toy work, which I have not had a chance to show. They've been seen at the Valentine's Day exhibits that we've done at McGowan Fine Art the last 2 years, but those have been small 8x10 size prints. February of 2012, I have a little under a year to get everything ready, a bunch of new prints and some new work done. And That's probably going to be like a month-long show there, and there'll be an opening, and I'm sure I'll talk about that as it comes up. But that's exciting. Awesome. I'm excited about that. I haven't really had a much chance to sort of play around with my personal work in a while, and I'm hoping this year that I can sort of do some more personal projects.
Yeah.
So more information about that.
Curious to see what those will be.
Exactly. I got some ideas. I've been writing some stuff down. What have you been up to? Enough about me. What about me? What's going on with you?
What about me? Let me see. What have I been doing? I've been... do you remember last year when I was trying to make those really inexpensive websites for artists?
Yes.
Yeah, the idea was... usually it takes, $1,500 to get into a website.
Yes.
And that's a lot of money, especially if you're just trying to get going in the arts. So I tried to do it for... let's see if I can make a $90 website that would cost me almost no effort to make. And then people could just get on the web. Yep. It turned out it's almost impossible to do that. Because although technically it's very easy to get the website set up and the hosting going, really what it comes down to is the training people how to upload things and change text.
Yep.
If I end up doing that, then I end up spending all the time changing the text and doing things. And I end up doing the marketing thinking and end up doing the strategy. Because this is all new stuff.
Yep.
To people. So that's something that's, it ended up at $250, that ended up not being very, very doable either.
Yep.
Because there were still these problems. But I had been working on another project for this guy in Hawaii, doing some WordPress customization.
Mm-hmm.
Which is stuff I don't ordinarily do, but I was able to do it for this.
Yeah.
And I learned a few things from that when I realized I could use this to create cheap websites for artists part two. And it would do away with some of these issues that I had before. So I've been working on templatizing some of the old HTML websites that we had been using. We've been using them for things like Your Portable Portrait Workshop uses one of the old templates that I made.
Yep.
Quick and dirty, easy to make. It looks good. It's designed to really balance text and image and not have a lot of space to fill up with stuff.
Right.
Because one thing you want to do is not over communicate.
Right.
You don't want to overwhelm people when you have a simple website.
And you've done all the new stuff now is all WordPress related, right?
You took
it and you integrated it into
WordPress. I customized WordPress, so the WordPress install I had to do some stuff it doesn't ordinarily do out of the box.
Yep.
So that will help me maintain and manage these things. So just been working on that on the side. It'd be nice to have an additional place to have regional information. So take it off my main blog and put it there.
Yep.
Now, speaking of which, also been working on products. I've been trying to think of what are things I can make that I can sell as a package.
Yep.
Because that's a way toward stabilizing the income.
Mm-hmm.
You're having more streams of what's it called?
Residual.
More streams or more revenue streams. Yeah. Multiple revenue streams. So you're not counting on one thing all the time. So, but I'm not used to thinking like that. So it's been kind of a challenge. So what is it I can do that I can sell? I already have these free download things and Excel spreadsheets that people use to figure stuff out. But then converting them into a package, what does that mean? So I just made another digital download, I should say, where people can pay $10 to get these 12 or 14 different PDFs for half size daily planner.
There's
this thing I make called the Emergent Task Planner, which is basically like a daily planner form. So you fill out what you want to do in the day, and there's this place where you can fill out what to do during the day and these blocks of time and places to keep notes. Yeah, it's an attractive looking form, and there's quite a few people who seem to like it.
Lots of people.
So the half size version is the first one I actually had a testing group help me with. So I actually said, I'm thinking of making this half size version. Does anyone want to help me test this thing?
Everyone's like, woo!
Yeah, so 60 people signed up for this.
Wow!
Yeah, so, and about maybe 20 of them were active. The rest of them were kind of lurkers.
Yeah.
But so we got them in the area and went through 6 revisions of this thing.
Nice.
And ended up with 3 different versions because different people had different uses for it. So instead of having all these time tracking bubbles in it, which is the one version that I would tend to use for myself.
Yep.
Some of them just needed a simple list. And some of them actually wanted all the tracking bubbles. It depended on what they did for a living.
Right, right.
So I ended up with those three variations. So one of the variations is free, and the other two are for pay.
And the free one's black and white?
The free ones are all black and white, but the free one, free complete package one, is the one that's a split between the three tracking things and three to-do things.
Okay.
And then there's one that's all tracking, and then there's one that's all just to-do lists.
Huh.
And those I'm trying to sell for $10 for a package. So it's like $1 a PDF or something like that.
Nice.
So I don't know. I've never really done this before, and I have no idea what the value is of these things.
Right, right. And, so you get to test it out.
Yeah, so I'm trying not to worry too much about, oh, I'm leaving money on the table, or I'm screwing up, or I'm messing my marketing up. I should have made a better store, or I should have done this, or I should have wrote that. Just put it out there and see what happens, and then adjust, and see what happens, and adjust.
Good.
It's difficult. I've been a nervous wreck since yesterday. Plus, I blew some of the posting stuff. Like the links weren't working right.
Oh,
someone commented saying, "I wouldn't spend $10 on something like this."
Did they really?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, so I just said, "You're right. Fix it."
Wow.
So they got some free codes to download the things.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. Is it somebody that's been on your following your site for a while, or
I hadn't recognized this person? But
interesting.
Yes, but it's a legitimate comment. I mean, you expect, once you ask people for money, people have all these expectations.
Yes, they do.
Of everything.
Of every little
thing. Everywhere in clean underwear, have a nice smile.
They ask. Oh, they want to know.
Fresh smells.
Exactly. Do you use deodorant?
Yeah.
I'm paying, so I need to know this.
It's like, I have $5. I'm your king. If it's our money, it's... Good things can become precious, so so it's interesting. Already, I'm starting to think about what does this really mean to sell things, and are there different ways of doing this? I was thinking about Mad Men, how and the advertising agencies in that day. I don't know if they still do it like this, but they didn't charge for the creative work; they charged for media placement, the buying of ads. So you're a company that wanted to sell soap. You go to these guys, and they would come up with some sort of creative campaign for you.
Yeah,
but that wasn't billed. Apparently, what they would bill you for was now you're going to place all these ads that we're going to produce for you in radio and print and on television, and that's where they would make their markup, because they would do the media buying. They'd go to the TV stations, we need this spot for whatever, and it costs this much, and then they would mark it up by, 20% or 100% and sell that, to the client.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I'm not sure if this is true or not. Some old-school advertising people might correct me on that.
According to Don Draper, this is how
but,
this works.
Yeah, but also, in other businesses, graphic design, you mark up everything you do. If you copy a disc for someone, you mark that up.
You mark it.
Yep. If you are buying print services for someone, you mark it up.
Yep.
And it's the selling of direct creative services. That's always been hard.
Yep.
Unless you've already made it, and then people are paying you for your time because it's you.
Right.
It's you, famous so-and-so.
Right.
Not just you, creative dude. Or something like that.
Yeah.
So there's this gap, I think, that
across.
So I'm not anywhere across that gap right now. So I have to think of ways of how do I provide legitimate value to people without being a tool about it. that's what keeps me.
That's what it all. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it all boils down to, basically.
Yeah.
How to not be a tool.
Yeah, but it could be that I'm overly sensitive to it too. Maybe I should just say, $50, that's how much it should cost.
Right.
You look at the Franklin Covey planner type things, they're ludicrous. They're really expensive.
Yeah.
If you buy a filler pack of it is 50 sheets in it, it's $30 or because it has the Franklin Covey system, and the printing isn't even that nice.
Right. But you're paying for the name.
You're paying for the name, and that's the only place you can get it. That's the only thing that has seven holes punched in it. And their weird Franklin Covey seven hole punch. I don't know how many holes they really have.
Yeah.
But they all have these kind of customary binder formats that don't fit anything else.
Right. It's like how Sony always makes their own proprietary stuff, like memory sticks. So it's like they only work with Sony stuff.
Yeah, it's annoying.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Don't be a Sony.
So I'm coming from this from the consumer point of view and thinking I want the flexibility. I want to be able to choose my own stuff.
Yeah.
They also want to make stuff that, that people legitimately think is like, you know, good. High quality and good. And it's a learning process. So
nice.
So I've got some ideas, but you can talk about that some other time.
Yes. What else? Is that it?
That's it. We're running a little bit longer.
We're a little over. Sorry for the extended.
Yeah, Sucker Punch sucked all the.
We apologize for spending so much time on Sucker Punch. I didn't think I would end up blabbing so much about that as I did.
It was important. It was an important touchstone for us to talk about. Because we were looking forward to it for, what, a year? It seems like that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting because it's like, all right, so if this one does good. I mean, that's sort of the, you know, like it encapsulates, for me, it encapsulates everything that I'm interested in. So can you really take a movie like that and do it and then have it liked by enough people that, you know, that niche of geekdom would suddenly become more popular or something? It was interesting. For somebody that it was clearly geared towards my market.
Do you want your market to become more mainstream?
It already is.
Is it?
Yeah. Compare pop culture stuff today.
Yeah.
To the way it was. I mean, when I was growing up, like I was a social outcast.
What was acceptable back
Nothing.
In the day?
Sports.
What was this? 1984.
Like when I was in school and stuff. Yeah. Like when I was in high school.
Yeah.
Even high school, like anime had just. We were on the cusp of anime going big.
Yeah.
Because when I was leaving middle school, entering high school, Akira was just about to come out. So that was 88. Mm. In fact, no, it was when I was in middle school, Akira came out because the summer of 89 was the summer of Batman. That was the summer that Tim Burton's Batman came out. And that was between my junior and that was between me leaving middle school and going into high school. Mm. That whole summer was just crazy because it was all Batman. Everything was Batman, yeah. Batman, Batman, Batman. I saw Batman 12 times at the movie theater.
that was the beginning.
I had 85 different Batman. No, well, I was into comics since I was little. Like I learned to read off of Green Lantern comics.
Really?
Yeah. Always been. And, you know, up until that point, like, you know, reading comics came with that social stigma that you were a nerd or you were a geek. And that wasn't tolerated at that time. It wasn't tolerated. You know, if you're not a jock, then, and God forbid somebody finds out that you like read or draw comics, like, God, that's it. You're going to get crucified. So when I was growing up, all this stuff, you know, all like Star Wars. And I mean, this was geek culture. This was like swept under the carpet. You know, look at Newberry Comics now. Like that's pop culture central and it's a store where you can go and buy all kinds of pop culture crap. And I think and it's just become more widely adapted. God forbid when I was in middle school or high school that a girl ever be into comics or anime or sci-fi. And now it's like, God, every girl out there, or every other girl you bump into.
Yeah.
She's into it. You know, she'll talk about Firefly. She'll talk about Joss Whedon. She'll talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Or she'll talk about, you know, it's nuts. Like it's just become such an accepted thing now. It's just part of society now.
Yeah. I don't think I knew any girls that like played video games.
Never. There was never that. There wasn't any when I was growing up. And now it's just all over the place. You know, it's just like Nintendo.
Yeah.
You know, like it's everywhere. I mean, you know, you got frat boys playing Halo now. Think about that. There's probably more frat boys playing Halo right now
been acceptable too because of all the sports games. There's the Madden franchise.
It could have been. Like, well, there was sports games back then, but
yeah, it was.
I think it's just become. It's just ingrained into the social thing now. Yeah. Where before, I mean, you know, you go to comic. I'd go to comic conventions every month down in Boston when I was little, and it was me and my buddy Ryan. There was never any females there. Now you go in there and it's like, oh, you know, like if I was like 18 or 19 now, like I'd be in hog heaven. Uh-huh. Like there would just be, you know, cute cartoon girls everywhere.
Yeah.
So it's cool. And I like the fact that I'm, you know, I'm still into all this stuff. So it's nice to see it. Like no matter where I go now, it's everywhere. It gets a little crazy.
Yeah.
And then another thing that I really like too is just the stuff that's coming out now that I never had as a kid.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Just, you know, I've got Force FX lightsabers and Wolverine claws and just all kinds of crazy things now that they make that they didn't have when I was little. So for me, it's cool because it's like now I'm getting to that point where, you know, I can afford to sort of, well, not really, but I can buy things now that remind me of my childhood. It's all about childhood. It's all this Freudian thing about how I, you know, miss my childhood and I wish I was five again and I was running around with swords and stuff like that. But I'm digressing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I picked this up later. Like, my high school is so different than I think a lot of people's high school. Because I went to an international school overseas.
Oh.
And we didn't have jocks.
Really?
And so when you go to the high school with no jocks, no jock power, I guess it's, you end up, it's different.
Huh. You have to explain that sometime.
Yeah, it's like, so I don't have a lot of these negative memories about high school that a lot of people do. And like, I was in Asia, so like, there was already kind of this nerd thing going on.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's the podcast. I'm Dave Say, graphic designer.
And I am photographer Sid Caesar, and we will see you next time in 2 weeks. And thank you to Michael Bellar and the As Is Ensemble for their intro and outro music at michaelbellar.com.
Word.